I think the most common question in the English language is, how are you? How are you doing? And there's a common answer to that question, the one we most always give, which is fine. Without thinking about it, we say fine. Except in the last few years, I think that's been changing. I think as often as people say fine now, they have a different answer to the question, how are you? They say busy. How are you? I'm busy. Busy. We are a busy people, a very busy people. And there's a whole industry of books and CDs and seminars about how to handle the busyness of our lives. I mean, the most famous is probably Stephen Covey, you know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It was, I don't know, voted the most important business and self-help book of the last century. And it's still in print. You can still get it. And one of the principles is first things first. And it talks about how every task, every job you have to do, everything that you have to get done can be described as either important or unimportant, can be described as urgent or not urgent. And then he says every task can be described as both of those together, important but not urgent. For example, let's say you're looking for a job. Well, something that's important and urgent is that you write your resume. So you have something to email out there or fax in so that someone might actually think about hiring you. Something that's important but not urgent is planning and thinking about how you're going to answer the questions an interviewer may ask you. Then there are things that are not important, but they're urgent, like the recruiter who's on the phone who desperately wants to talk to you about a job in Utah, which is the last place on earth you want to move, so you're not going to go there, so why bother talking to him? But he really wants your attention. And then there's the not important, the not urgent, one of my favorites, which is where you just sort of surf the web about a job you might like to have in Hawaii on the beach for 2 hours a day, 30 weeks a year. Wasting your time. Everything he says falls in one of those four categories. And he says our goal is to manage the items that are urgent and important that demand our immediate attention, but really to spend a lot of time in that second area, what's important but not urgent. The things that are really going to matter down the line, but we need to take time now to do them right. Planning and thinking and making decisions and planting seeds and getting things started that will bear fruit later down the road, rather than subject ourselves to the tyranny of the immediate. We're busy people, Covey says, and we must put our energy and our time into what matters most. And today I'd suggest that one of the things that matters the very most is our vocation, which is our calling from God. And, you know, the first service we turned to Phil Woodruff, our resident Latin scholar, and the word vocation comes from the Latin calling, to call. So our calling is something that comes from beyond ourselves. Last week, Kathy talked about turning from being a wanderer through life to being a pilgrim, someone who's on a journey, who's heading somewhere, going someplace with a purpose in mind, seeing your life as a journey toward God. But today we're going to look at things from the other end. While we are seeking God, God is also calling us. God has something for you to do. Vocation means calling, and you've all got one. Now, Moses found that out in a most unlikely way in the desert, hearing the voice of God speak to him from a bush that was burning. But he hears not only God's voice, he hears God's call. God has something for Moses to do, and God promises to help Moses do it. And God has something for you to do, and God promises to help you do it. Now, it's a rather large task for Moses, leading the Jews out of slavery in Egypt. Moses is to be God's person in Pharaoh's court. But to what task is God calling you? Well, first and foremost, God's calling you to be God's person where you are. It's our baptism that sets us apart to be God's man, God's woman, wherever it is that we find ourselves. Now, that means in our jobs, certainly. I mean, sometimes God calls you to a particular kind of work. Ministers talk all the time about being called by God, but in our Presbyterian tradition, building on our Lutheran friends, we talk about the priesthood of all believers, that we are all called by God, no matter what particular job you may have. We are all called to be God's people, no matter what it is that you do. There are people who feel very much called to their job, to their work. Teachers feel called to help young lives develop. You know, there are people that think doctors are only in it for the money, but most physicians I've met genuinely feel called to do healing work. Paramedics and police officers and nurses and chemists working on cures for illness. We could all name it dozens of jobs in which people feel called to be part of what, to do what they're doing, to be part of something greater than themselves. But even beyond a specific job, what callings do people feel within their jobs? I know an executive who takes it as a calling to mentor young talent. I know a convenience store clerk who feels called to welcome each and every person that walks into his store with a smile. I actually met a toll collector on the tri-state late one night not long ago who engaged me in a brief but very friendly conversation. Amazing. People can see a calling in the way they do their jobs and how they interact with the people in their work, sometimes even more than in specifically what it is they're doing. But calling goes beyond what we do in our work life. Otherwise, we'd have to limit God's call to paying positions, and that won't do. I remember the older pastor who pulled me aside not long after our oldest son was born and said, "Remember, Greg, God called you to be a husband and a father before he called you to be a minister." Well, that's more than 20 years ago. And I've never forgotten it. I may not always have lived up to it, but I've never forgotten it. Would it change the way you look at the people in your life if you saw yourself as called to those relationships? Diana Butler Bass talks about the father who had lost his job and ended up staying home with the kids while his wife went back to work. And he was surfing the web for job possibilities one day when his daughter wanted his attention. He told her he needed to use the computer to find a job. And she told him, "You're my dad. That's your job. You don't need to do anything else." And it was an epiphany, a revelation for him, as he saw that being a father to his daughter was indeed more than a job. It was a calling, a real vocation, something he was called to do with the best of his ability, with the best of his energy. Think about that for a moment. You're called to be a father or a mother, called to be a son or a daughter, or a wife or a husband, called to be a friend, a grandparent. If you see those relationships as a calling, as a vocation, you just might look at those people differently. Those people just might be a gift from God to you, and they call forth something from you as well. It's not an accident that these people are in your life. They are your calling. I know a woman who recently discovered a friend she'd lost touch with long ago now has cancer, and she felt a calling to reconnect with her childhood friend, and they're now in touch, email, phone. It's a simple thing, phone calls and emails, but to her, it's a calling. Now, God spoke to Moses from a burning bush, and that would get my attention in a minute, but God seems to be much more subtle these days. But God asked Moses to do something new, and there are times when God calls us to change, to step out of our comfort zones, to do something new for God. Like PADS could be one example. We really do need a number of new people this year who haven't done PADS before to step forward and take a shift once a month. And my experience at this church is that when there is a need, There are also people who emerge to meet that need, so I'm not worried that it will happen. It will, because I'm quite sure that God is stirring the pot quite a bit and that there's a call emerging. So a vocation or a calling could be something churchy, like going on a mission trip or working with PADS, but it could be something that doesn't appear connected to the church as well. Tutoring the kid across the street who's having trouble with math, or mowing your neighbor's lawn because he's in the hospital, agreeing to chair the PTA committee nobody else wants to chair, passing on your sister-in-law's resume to the hiring manager at work. All those could be callings from God. And sometimes you may not even know that it's God who's calling you. Rachel Riemann, in her book, My Grandfather's Blessings, tells the story of Sarah, a middle-aged woman who, when she was a teenager, had bulimia. And that was before that name was even known. In her time, she didn't know what to call it. She just felt desperately alone. And she longed to know someone who had experienced what she was experiencing and yet somehow got through it, that would give her the hope to know that maybe she could survive this terrible, terrible thing that she could not escape. Well, Sarah never did meet someone who had had bulimia, but somehow over the years she managed to work through it herself to a fairly normal life with a husband and kids. And then in her middle age, she read about a support group for girls with bulimia, and she decided she would go. And she never said much. Every once in a while, she would volunteer the fact that she had had bulimia when she was a girl. But most of the time, she sat and listened to these teenagers tell their stories. And one night, as Sarah was leaving, one painfully thin girl stopped her. And she had tears in her eyes, and she thanked Sarah for coming and said how much it meant just to know her. And Sarah was puzzled. She could not remember ever even speaking to the girl, and she did not know her name. She must have forgotten some interaction with her, and she racked her brain to think what it could be as she drove home. And then she realized, she recognized what had happened. And when Sarah walked through the door, her husband saw the tears on her cheeks and said, "What's the matter? What happened? What happened?" And Sarah replied, "I have become the person that I needed to meet." Without even knowing it, Sarah had answered a call and had been a blessing to that young woman whose name Sarah did not even know. So sometimes our vocation demands that we change our lives, make a new decision, take a new course. But at other times, God may not be calling us to do anything new at all. Sometimes God's just calling you to see that where you are and what you're doing is exactly what God has called you to do and where God has called you to be. Do you remember the film Chariots of Fire about the 1924 Paris Olympics? Eric Liddell is the Flying Scot. He's the son of missionary parents who has become a sprinter, and he ends up winning a gold medal in the Olympics. But early in the movie, his sister Jenny is urging him to give up this trivial running thing that he does and return to the mission field. And she's elated when Eric says, "Well, I've decided. I'm going back to China. The missionary service has accepted me." And Jenny says, "Oh, I'm so pleased." But Eric says, "I've got a lot of running to do first, Jenny. Jenny, you've got to understand that I believe God made me for a purpose, for China, but God also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure." Running wind sprints could seem as far from faith as you can get. But when Eric Liddell ran, he felt God's pleasure, God's joy in it. And that was enough. That was a calling right there, just to be God's person and to appreciate the gift that God had given him. There are times you do not need to do anything differently than just to realize that you are God's person right where you are. There's no better example of a man's conversion than A Christmas Carol by Dickens, which Ebenezer Scrooge, the miser, the selfish, completely selfish man, he's visited by the three ghosts who show him the error of his ways. And then Scrooge wakes up. He's an entirely different person. But where is he going to go in his life? He's going to go back to the same counting house where he worked each and every day. He's still going to be Bob Cratchit's boss. He's still going to be the uncle to his nephew, Fred. He's still going to be in all the same places, and yet everything is new. Everything is different now because he senses a new calling, even though the exterior of his life is the same. Scrooge is God's person now, and he knows it. And his life can never be the same again. Well, what difference does it make? What difference does it make if you sense your calling, your vocation, if you see yourself as God's person? What difference could it possibly make? Well, there's a lot of answers to that question too, but here's just one. And let's turn again to the story of Ebenezer Scrooge, but this time the modernized film version with Bill Murray in the title role. It's called Scrooged with a D, where Bill Murray plays Frank Cross, interesting name, Frank Cross, who is a TV executive who is putting on an international special live on Christmas Eve, but it's not really about sharing the Christmas story. It's really about making as much money as he can. And Frank Cross is a heartless boss who fired someone on Christmas Eve, and he's a terrible brother who gave his brother this crummy set of towels for Christmas, and he's a lousy ex-boyfriend. But the ghosts of Christmas past and present and future, they work their magic on him too. And they open Frank's eyes. And right there, at the stroke of midnight, he interrupts his own silly live television special, grabs the microphone, and starts speaking to the whole world about what he's learned, about what it's like finally, to know that you're doing what God has called you to do and being the person God has called you to be. And here's what he says. I can't do it like Bill Murray can, but here's what he says. I'm not crazy. It's Christmas Eve. It's the one night when we all act a little nicer. We smile a little easier. We share a little more. For a couple of hours, we are the people we always hoped we could be. It's really a miracle because it happens every Christmas Eve. And if you waste that miracle, you're going to be sorry. I know. You have to do something. You have to do something. You have to take a chance and get involved. There are people who don't have enough to eat and who are cold. And you can go and greet these people and take an old blanket and say here, and make them a sandwich and say, here. I get it now. And if you can give it, it can happen. The miracle can happen to you, not just the poor and the hungry. Everybody's got to have this miracle. It can happen tonight for you all if you believe in this thing. The miracle will happen, and you'll want it again tomorrow. You won't say Christmas is just once a year, it's a fraud. It's not. It can happen every day. You've just got to want that feeling. You'll want it every day. It can happen to you. I believe in it now. I believe it's going to happen in me. I'm ready for it. And it's great. It's a good feeling. It's better than I've felt in a long time. When you finally see yourself as God's person, then you become the person you always hoped you could be. And it's a really good feeling. It's a really good feeling. It might be better than you felt in a long time. Pray with me. Oh Lord, you call each of us. Give us the ears to hear it, the eyes to see it. Give us the faith to be your people, wherever we are. In Christ's name, for Christ's sake, for the world's sake, and for our own sakes. And let all God's people say, Amen.